It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Thanks, Kalani.
You know, Mitch.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Thank you, ESPN.
We love the Cougars.
Mitch Harper.
Welcome on in, Cougar Tracks Podcast, powered by KSLSports.com. I'm your BYU insider, Mitch Harper. Happy as always to have you on board to the podcast, wherever you may be listening. Appreciate you stopping on by to check out the show. If this is your first time listening, subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever podcasts are available. If you're a regular listener, you know the drill. Follow me on Twitter, @Mitch_Harper, and also @KSLSports on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. BYU versus USC. A brief, but I think impactful history on BYU football, and a pretty cool history and a cool series as well to see the Cougars and the Trojans tangle once again coming up on Saturday night for the fourth time ever. And it's the fourth meeting that includes at least one ranked team, and BYU and the Trojans should be another fun game. I'm going to revisit some of that history with BYU and USC because this series is one that's kind of had a profound impact on my interest in college football and BYU football. It's something that really stood out to me, so I'll share some of my memories of the BYU-USC rivalry, but we'll start things off with the Cougars being number 13 in the college football playoff rankings. It's amazing to think that BYU is knocking on the door, potentially, of being in a New Year's Six Bowl. But I think what's interesting in all of this is that BYU's best-selling point is truly the fans. Kalani Sitake talks about it a lot to us in the media and always says, the fans this, the fans that, the fans this. But I do believe the fan component is going to be one of the big drivers potentially for BYU qualifying for an at-large bid. Because as you all know by now, BYU has to be selected by the playoff committee. They can be in the top 12. That's where they got to be at a minimum to be in that at-large pool. But they got to be selected because there's no guarantees. What's going to be the big selling point for BYU? I think it's fan attendance, because you think about it, would Oklahoma be putting out a lot of fans to go to a Fiesta Bowl or a Peach Bowl that doesn't include the playoff? I don't know, maybe. I mean, that's a national following. They'd probably get about 20,000 fans. I feel like BYU, if they go to the Fiesta Bowl, especially the Fiesta Bowl with how close it is, I think there could be 40, 45,000 BYU fans. I'm not even kidding. I think that when these bowl games that are not playoff games, they are trying to sell out the venue, because that is becoming more and more difficult as the years go by with players opting out, these teams just not caring about the bowl games that don't include the playoff. It's tough to sell out the venues. BYU goes to the Peach Bowl, they go to the Fiesta Bowl especially, they're packing the house. I even think in Atlanta, Cougar fans would go to that trip. From Utah, from the West Coast, from, of course, the Southeast, they would all converge in Atlanta for a Peach Bowl. I saw the USA Today projection of BYU and Notre Dame in the Peach Bowl. Sign me up. BYU and Notre Dame, because I think BYU would beat Notre Dame. I do. I mean, they'll get a chance at the Irish next year in Las Vegas, which will be a lot of fun at Allegiant Stadium, but I think BYU would take out Notre Dame, and that would be a way to put this season for BYU football, I think, among the great seasons ever. I mean, it would be, if you go to a New Year's Six and you play a brand like Notre Dame, who's only got one loss this year, it's the most nondescript one-loss season for Notre Dame ever. And I guarantee it's painting the selection committee that Cincinnati beat Notre Dame and Notre Dame keeps winning because they can't let the Irish jump Cincinnati. Notre Dame against any other Group of Five team would have jumped that Group of Five team. But since it was Cincinnati, they can't jump them. It would be blatantly obvious that it's a complete racket in the playoff committee room if they jump the Irish over Cincinnati. So I think BYU and Notre Dame would be amazing as a Peach Bowl. It would be a packed house. Both BYU and Notre Dame fans would fill it up. Would be a great scene. But, you know, I think some of the big things, you know, Oklahoma and Michigan State, BYU's got to jump those teams. And, you know, I think something's got to break BYU's way. They need Cincinnati desperately in the college football playoff. Like, this is a non-starter if Cincinnati doesn't go to the playoff. And I still think there's a chance that Cincinnati could be left out. One, they could lose. I think Houston could potentially knock them out. I do, in an AAC title game. But I think Oklahoma State, that's going to be fascinating to see the dynamic there. And what's interesting, too, with that whole angle, how will the playoff committee view a Big 12 team that's not Oklahoma or Texas? You know, will this be signs of things to come? Will they say, you know, we'll let the future Big 12 member Cincinnati jump Oklahoma State or stay in front of Oklahoma State? They're going to be joining your league. You can, you know, tote it around all you want, things like that. I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic there to see, you know, if it comes down to Oklahoma State and Cincinnati. I think I would still keep Cincinnati in the top four, but I think there's going to be a compelling argument for Oklahoma State, though. It'd be interesting. I feel like the Big 12 is one of those leagues that they feel is more expendable. Like, there's been no respect given to the Big 12 conference in these rankings. I think they'll keep Oklahoma State behind Cincinnati, and they know that Cincinnati is eventually going to the Big 12, so the Big 12 can sell it as, oh, yeah, we got a team in there still. Who knows? But Cincinnati has got to get in the playoff, and then it opens up another at-large spot, and away we go. And I think BYU could be in a bowl game. And, you know, this is the first time I will say I've been adamant that there was no chance. No chance. But that pole position at number 15, and they just slowly but surely crept up. They moved up the ladder, and they just keep moving on up. You hope, though, that Wisconsin doesn't catapult in front of them, that an Iowa doesn't catapult in front of them. Things like that can't happen, because that is something that people always got to remember. It's not just simply, oh, the teams in front of you lose, you move up. That's not how the playoff rankings work. It's not like the AP or the coaches poll, because that's usually the tried and true way of how rankings work and those things. The playoff committee, they can go by their own set of standards, and they don't really disclose how they do it, but they're going to do what they got to do. So I think that will be fascinating to see, but for legitimately, I feel like there is a shot now for BYU to potentially go to the New Year's Six, and I found it, you know, crazy, just a outlandish thought that it was not possible at all, but there's a puncher's chance now, and I think it would be pretty cool for BYU to do it. And man, you know, the thing is, too, is that if BYU can get to a New Year's Six as an independent with a schedule that features seven P5 teams, and now you're going to the Big 12 Conference, why would Kalani Sitake want to leave BYU? Why? I mean, you're having success at this level. The possibilities are endless in the Big 12 Conference, I would think. You know, the coaching carousel rumors are going to be interesting with Kalani Sitake going forward, because this carousel continues to heat up. It just does. All these openings are happening. Florida's now open. Some of these coaching jobs and vacancies are going to have some crossover between the type of candidates they want, and some schools might elevate a Kalani Sitake potentially as a higher listed candidate because some of their original top candidates went to other jobs. It's going to be fascinating. I think that after this Saturday, the final regular season weekend of the season, I think we're going to see a lot of action on Sunday and Monday for teams finally announcing some of these head coach vacancies. So it'll be, we're going to get a lot of answers here very soon in regards to the coaching carousel. But I just feel like, man, if you're having this success already with 2- and 3-star talent, what could you potentially do in the Big 12 with 4 and occasionally the 5-star talent like a Kingsley Suamataia or maybe a Cormani McClain, if you can get him? I mean, possibilities are endless, and I think there's a compelling case for Kalani Sitake to want to stay at BYU. But first things first, and Kalani would tell you this, he would be the first guy to say we're just focused on this weekend and the field of play and getting these guys better every single day. Well, they're getting better every single day, or at least trying to get ready for the USC Trojans. And who would have thought coming into this season that the team with the chance to win 10 games and go to a New Year's Six was BYU and not USC? USC, I thought, was a fraud coming into the year. I mean, the schedule, though, was set up nicely for USC. That was the only saving grace, was it was the weakest Pac-12 schedule they've ever had since Clay Helton was the head coach, and they had so many tough games at home with the likes of Utah. They had no Oregon on the schedule. I just thought, man, this is tailor-made for USC to really run roughshod on the Pac-12 conference. Clearly, I was wrong. This is a soft football team. USC is soft. They just are. But there's still talent with USC, and that's always kind of that one element there with the athleticism component. It is tangible with USC. One thing, though, with the Trojans that was interesting, their interim head coach, Dante Williams, after Tuesday's practice, he was not impressed with what he saw. They're coming off a abysmal performance against UCLA, their crosstown rival, last Saturday. And their first full practice was on Tuesday after that loss to the Bruins. And interim head coach Dante Williams was not impressed with the effort to start practice on Tuesday for USC.
We started practice today. We definitely didn't bounce back, right? It was definitely slow, so I had to get on a couple guys and fire guys back up. And that's why, toward the end of practice, I had to bring people up to make sure we understand the way we started practice is not our standard. That was terrible, right? You can't just all of a sudden show up for a football game and think anything's going to go your particular way. So the sense of urgency definitely has to pick up. So when we started practice, we have not bounced back, right? As the course of practice kind of went on, I felt a little more sense of urgency. I feel guys starting to pick it up. But at the same time, right, coaches don't lead teams to prominence and dominance, right? It has to be player-driven. And right now, we need some of those leaders to continue to step up.
That right there, to me, says BYU should win this game comfortably. They should. USC wants this season over with. They want it done. And they want to get out. They want to get a new head coach. They want to start the new era and look ahead to 2022. I think they're annoyed that they've got a game next week against Cal that had to get delayed due to COVID-19 with the Cal Bears a few weeks ago. They wish that this was the last swan song, and I don't think they will have any interest to play in a bowl game. I mean, anyone that's on USC's roster that has aspirations to go to the NFL or has a draftable grade coming up in spring, who's going to play in that bowl game? Like, there's no incentive for any of those guys to finish this out. I just think they're not motivated, and I think that's why BYU, they're only a, 6.5-point favorite, but they should honestly be even more. Like, BYU should dominate USC. They should. They should win by 2 touchdowns. USC's got talent, got athleticism, I get all that, but they're poorly coached, they're soft, and they have no interest to play. When you're this late in the season, and I know it's a grind, football is not fun, practices, it's a grind. But I think there's this lack of, and, you know, it's speculation on my part, look from the outside looking in and basing it off a quote, but when you hear the coach flat out saying that they did not bring the enthusiasm and the urgency, that's a problem. And USC media members get to watch practice, and they were saying the same thing on Tuesday, saying there was no urgency. It looked bad. So USC, this late in the year, a team that's filled with mistakes all the time, they're practicing poorly. There's no sense of urgency. It's code for me that BYU should win. Now, the one thing that makes me pause on that thought is that I think USC's offense can still put up some points. And Jackson Dart's a good quarterback. If this was Keenan Slovis at QB, I'd say BYU by 14 guaranteed. But Jackson Dart is going to be a good QB for the Trojans, and they've got some, you know, personnel that could give BYU's defense a a lot of fits. I mean, if BYU's defense is struggling in stretches against Georgia Southern, rest assured they're going to have some struggles against USC. So this has the makings to be a game where BYU, their offense puts up maybe 45, but the defense gives up 35, and it could be a high-scoring game. BYU's the better football team. I think Cougar fans are getting a little bit too caught up in the name and the prestige of USC, but I get it, because USC is a historical blue blood brand. I have deep respect for the USC football tradition, man. I'll tell you, as we kind of look at the history of the BYU-USC series history.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Between the Cougars and Trojans, Saturday's game will be the fourth ever meeting between the two schools. The 2003 meeting in L.A., last time BYU played in the Coliseum, that was one of my, you know, like, moments where I started to fall in love, truly, with college football. Like, you got to understand with me, I've been watching and following college football since I was 6 years old. 6 years old. Now, I know that's very strange. It's unusual. I was an unusual kid. Like, I was into reading media guides at the age of 7. I wanted to do book reports on game programs or media guides. I was a weird kid. Like, it's a weird upbringing, rest assured. But that 2003 game was, I don't know, like, I've always been a kid that, like, or person. I'm not a kid now. I'm 33. But I always was a kid growing up that was infatuated with L.A. You know, I've always loved the Lakers. I was always kind of infatuated with L.A. teams and the L.A. scene and just kind of that star power and that stardom. So always, whenever there was the chance to watch USC, if we got the game, whether it was ABC or, this is a throwback for you, ESPN Game Plan, I was tuning in, or FSN, Fox Sports Net, with that grainy picture on FSN, Barry Tompkins and Steve Fisiak on the play-by-play. I'd always tune in to watch the Trojans because they were just one of those teams I loved watching, and I always enjoy watching USC. Same with Miami on the East Coast. There's just certain brands that I always like to watch in college football beyond just BYU. So when BYU and USC, it was in 1998, announced a home-and-home, I was pumped, man. I was jacked as a kid. I was like, yes, BYU and USC. So for years, I was so, just like hyped at the thought of going to the Coliseum. So BYU and USC, when it officially was nailed down for the 2003 season, I was excited. And I remember my dad said that we were going to go to the game. We actually drove down all the way to LA from West Valley City. And that was a cool thing. I mean, that was something that, it made me feel like just the pageantry of college football. Like, BYU's pageantry was always on the field, but like the game day experience at BYU when I was growing up was nothing special. It is significantly better now. You know, David Almodova and the marketing team with Cougar Canyon, it is leaps and bounds better than where it was. But at USC in 03, like, BYU's experience was not good, game day experience. It wasn't good. Going to USC and seeing the Coliseum, that was just so cool to me. And because I up until that point, I really didn't go to many road games. I mean, as a kid, we weren't blessed enough to always travel anywhere and things like that. Like, we'd occasionally go to Disneyland once. I did. But I wasn't much of a world traveler as a kid. I look at my kids now and I think, man, you've been to this place, you've been to Florida, you've been to California. You're pretty lucky. And, you know, I didn't experience that. So going to USC and going to LA was a big deal for me. And same way when I went to my first ever Lakers game in LA in 1999, the lockout season, that was a big deal too. But so seeing BYU and USC was huge. So I'm looking forward to being there again. This Saturday, I'll be there covering for KSL, and it's just kind of cool to think for me personally, you know, always just growing up liking watching USC football and watching games at from my television set at the Coliseum, and to go there as a kid who loved college football in those stands, and now to be able to sit in the press box, it's pretty cool, and I'm very grateful for the chance and excited to see it. And And that USC BYU game was pretty good too, and it was a quality football game. It started out terrible for BYU; they were down 21-0. Then they got a safety, Casey Bills, with an intentional grounding on Matt Leinart, and no one in the stands and in the Coliseum realized or understood that's a safety. And you know, BYU scored the first points on the Trojans that year, because remember the previous week, Auburn, who was loaded, they were like a preseason number one team, they got shut out. And that was pretty much the same personnel on that Auburn team that went on to go undefeated the following year in 2004. So that was a big win for USC. And to get any sort of points on the Trojans, that was just massive. And then in the second half, you know, Matt Barry and Daniel Coates, they made a little bit of a run, and they had the Trojan fans sweating. It was 21-18 in the fourth quarter, and had it not been for the return of Mike Williams, who was a little bit banged up, that talented wide receiver who, that was one of those dudes, like, I loved watching Mike Williams. Any chance I could get to watch Mike Williams, like, that was my guy. Like, a non-BYU guy, I always have dudes that I love watching away from BYU. Mike Williams was my guy. I loved watching that guy. I remember when he signed with USC, I just thought, man, that dude's going to be awesome. And seeing him in person was pretty cool too. But what I also liked about that USC-BYU game in 2003 was the TV broadcast. And I had the game recorded on VHS tape, because I was like, I got to relive this thing, whether it's a win or a loss, I got to rewatch it. I loved the intro on that ABC regional game with the legendary Keith Jackson.
They are like thoroughbreds bolting from the starting gate. These BYU receivers seeming to flash across your vision. And there's always been a Gatling gun quarterback to throw the football to them, picking and choosing among the scattering catchers. This football season doesn't seem to be any different, but for the record, you should know, tonight, the Hunter is different. He's a big fella. They call him a Trojan. And he's got some lofty ideas about filling his larder with Cougars. USC roaming off to a hinterland last week, handling all the elements to tame a tiger, casting aside any suggestions they might not travel well without their horse. Tonight, the truncheon-toting Trojans of USC host the elusive Cougars of BYU on ABC Sports. From the historic Los Angeles Coliseum, college football makes its presence for 2003. As usual, September is a hot month in Southern California, but we got lucky today. It was only in the 90s. Offering up a comfortable evening to those who have come to the Coliseum to see this first ever meeting between the BYU Cougars and the USC Trojans. Both teams won their openers against teams from the South. BYU beating Georgia Tech, USC shutting out Auburn, and the Trojans made a big jump in the polls. And here come the Trojans for their first home game of 2003. They're ranked fourth and fifth in the major polls. And there are a lot of people around Los Angeles and Southern California who have lofty ideas for them. But we'll see. This could be a mud hole tonight. Dan Fouts with me, along with Todd Harris on the field. I'm Keith Jackson. And Pete Carroll said to his Trojans, "We have only just begun," to quote an old song. Don't get cocky. And he better not.
Wow. I have goosebumps. That was just awesome. I just remember that game so vividly, and I can't believe it was 18 years ago. It's time flies by. I remember being in the parking lot buying a bootleg USC Orange Bowl Champions t-shirt from the 2002 season. It had the OB orange. I was like, I got to get that. It was a knockoff bootleg shirt, so you know it was drippy. You know it was something that was maybe looked like a hype beast back in 2003. I remember going to the BYU alumni tailgate. Robbie Bosco was speaking at the event, Gifford Nilsson. It was fun. It was just a cool setting. And, you know, BYU was not a good football team then. But, I mean, I remember going away from that game thinking, man, BYU hung with USC. Like, they're going to be good this year. Because remember, they were coming off a 5-7 season. They, of course, ended up 4-8, had a lot of issues at the quarterback position. They had to thrust in a freshman in John Beck, who obviously went on to be a great, but wasn't ready at that moment. It was a difficult year for BYU, but that was pretty cool setting to be in the Coliseum and watch that game. The following year was not as close. BYU hosted USC in Provo. I was at that game, too. I remember that one, for some reason, the band of USC standing out more distinctly because it was so interesting seeing a road team kind of consume the stadium. Like, that was one of those games where, because BYU fans were down and out on the team, back-to-back losing years, they were at a low point on BYU football at that time. So USC fans, they invaded Provo, and nonstop, you just kept hearing... be talking to my dad, I'm like, hey, Dad, Dad, it just gets louder. I love this sound, though. Gosh, it's the tradition of college football. Over and over and over again, and it happened a lot because, well, USC rolled BYU 42-10 that day. The one highlight in that game was that hookup between John Beck and Todd Watkins for about 66 yards. It was like, oh, baby, back to Watkins. It's going to be a deep threat all year, and it was. That season in 2004, BYU was hooking up on the deep ball early and often with John Beck and Todd Watkins, Sports Illustrated's top deep threat receiver in the nation that year. And then 2019, BYU and USC linked up again for a three-game series that was announced in 2013. BYU had to wait 6 years to host the Trojans, but they came in Provo, and that was a memorable win. Zach Wilson takes down the Trojans, who were a nationally ranked team coming off a 5-7 year. They were feeling high and mighty after a quick 2-0 start, but BYU brought them back down to earth and made you realize, hey, you still have Clay Helton as head coach. You're not that good of a team. And BYU won that game 30-27 in OT. But, yeah, I love this BYU-USC series. I think it's a great matchup, and I hope that it continues in that 2023 season with another trip to the Coliseum. But it's going to be tricky because, you know, BYU will be in a conference that year, and you don't want to give up the Tennessee game to open the season. You're going to probably have 8 or 9 Big 12 games. Do you want to possibly play at least 10 P5s on the schedule? To me, I say yes, because why not? Like, you're not going to be in the top four in 2023. Like, just play great games week in and week out, please. Like, who is going to say no? Like, what the fan experience? Think about that. A Big 12 schedule paired with a non-conference schedule with Tennessee and USC. Like, I know Kalani Sitake is probably like, no, please, I'm going to leave to Washington if you give me that schedule. But come on, like, that's just the ultimate fan experience. Seeing that quality of games week in, week out. Like, right now, the past 3.5 weeks of BYU football, no one's gave a rip about BYU football the last 3 weeks. Like, I care because I'm covering, it's my job, and I'm covering the day-in, day-out grind. But on a national scale, they just have not cared. They haven't registered a thought since that Virginia game, and that was more than 3 weeks ago. With the type of schedule that BYU is going to have in the Big 12, paired with a few marquee non-conference games, I think it'd be pretty fun. But, hey, that's Tom Homo's decision. Maybe they get out of the USC game because they've already done two. We'll see. But I just think there's a lot of value to still maintaining that West Coast presence, maintaining relationships with Pac-12 teams, I think is going to be important because you want to still give your West Coast BYU fans some close games to travel to in the near future. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Cougar Tracks podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun talking today. And if you haven't done so already, make sure to subscribe to the show on Apple, Google Play, Spotify, and wherever major podcasts are found. And download the KSL Sports app today. It's always presented by the University Federal Credit Union. We'll be back later this Friday as I travel to LA to get ready for the Cougars and the Trojans. And we'll also preview BYU versus Utah on the hardwood. Man, what a jam-packed week. Oh, Elite Eight women's soccer as well. And BYU women's basketball's got a big game too. Shout out to Lee Kumard, the new interim head coach in replace of Jeff Judkins, who's currently dealing with COVID-19 as he's quarantined. So a lot to get to coming up on Friday. Enjoy the Thanksgiving break. We'll talk later this week here on the Cougar Tracks podcast. And it's always powered by KSLSports.com.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.